Sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, sahaveryan karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, so we are on chapter 7. Any questions to anything previous in the chapter? Yes.
Prabhu, we're talking about reading books.
Yes.
I went to the Nectar Devotion I read this morning.
Okay.
Just to clarify, then to get the central principle, Vedic knowledge and all the principles, this 4 book is enough. And if I only read them, that would be fine.
Yes.
But like if I, any moment, can read another book, let's say Pancharatrika or
Okay, look, like this. You have, so these 4 books are enough.
Uh-huh.
Enough in the sense that from these 4 books you can realize that Krishna is the Supreme, you are the servant, and you are supposed to serve Him. In the mood of always remember Him, and if you cannot, then don't forget Him.
Okay.
But ideal, always remember. So then you can perform the greatest service, not the best service, towards your master, who is Krishna. So these 4 books, from various angles, they describe, they show you how you do it. How you can perform. So you have Bhagavad Gita, no? Krishna and Arjuna, the description, and everything what we need to know about ourselves and how we are situated in this material world and what happens when we don't follow Dharma.
Okay.
What happens when we follow Dharma? So now all the Dharma Shastra basically is describing Bhagavad Gita. Now if that's not enough, that's not understood, then you have the devotees practically applying their knowledge, what they are doing. So then Bhagavatam is full of stories and descriptions of the devotees who are applying devotional service in various processes. There are 9 processes, and then so various of those, they are applying them and they are successful. So we can follow in their footsteps. And then, if that's not enough, then we have the example of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu coming here. He is the Lord Himself, and He comes here because He wants to taste the rasa which devotees have for Him. That's the most attractive. So now from that we can really understand that the serving Krishna, the loving relationship, this is the most intimate relationship we can ever have, we can ever think of. So that will give us the most experience, it will give us most anything. So to do this, then you need to know how to approach them, right? So then you have, okay, nectar of instruction, nectar of devotion. Now, so these are enough. Now, if you don't know, say, okay, nectar of instruction tells you, worship the deities, reside in the holy dham, read scriptures, right? So, residing in the Holy Dhamma. So what does it mean? If you don't know what does it mean reside in Holy Dhamma, you have to read the book, how to reside now in some place, right? You build a house. You want to build a house, you read the book about how to build a house, how to get there. So anything which clarifies now how to do that point, you do. Or how to worship deities. You want to worship, you don't know anything about worshiping deities. So if you find somebody who can instruct you how to worship deities, okay, great. Guru Sadhu. Okay, if you don't know, see the Shastra. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives Archana Padati. Rupa Goswami gives Archana Padati. Srila Prabhupada gave short description. So it's there. Then GBC Press printed Pachradra Pradip, so then there is very elaborate Archana Padati. So you read this book for what? To follow one of the principles, which is one of the main principles. So if you are the fortunate one who don't have to read the book, because you will associate with somebody who will explain to you, then you get that done. But if you don't have it, contact the book. But you have to be, see, getting the book is very sometimes dangerous because you don't know. You have to make sure that this is bona fide book. The translation is bona fide. Because the person who writes the book, who translates the book, then the consciousness will be in it. So if he has some, if you read some Archana Parati of some Kali worshipper, so then you will have different mood. And we don't necessarily want that.
Yeah, okay.
Right? So you have to apply it. But it's not your goal. This is not what you are aiming for. Okay, worshipping deities, it's great, it's good. But what is the worship? The worship, the ritual itself, it's not. It's a means, but it's not the goal. You don't want to stop there. So, like in the third devotion, the Brahmana, he worships the deity, but as a manasa puja. Mentally, he worships the deity. And he is actually not in contact with Vishnu. And to the fact when he performs Manasa Puja, it's so real that when he actually tests if the Svidra is cold, then he gets burned. And then he breaks his meditation and then, in fact, the finger is burned. Yes. So that's... But to know how to do it, you need Guru Sadhu Shastra. So Shastra... in the form of books, then it's a portion of the whole thing. If you have a guru or a sadhu who can not tell you the shastra, you are in advantage. But if you read something else or you get sidetracked, worshipping, and now you just get into the worshipping, and then you get, oh, we can worship anything, we can do anything, anybody. And then, why this? And then you get completely bewildered, and you get bewildered what actually the aim of the worship is. And then you get into some other padatis, or they are more elaborate, they must be better. But they are not Gaudiya. They are not Vaishnav. So, how are they better? Because they are not bigger. You can argue like that. But that then you get sidetracked, and you completely lose the point which you were starting with. So to prevent it, these four books are enough. And if something is not clear, you should consult somebody who can help you in that. Not the somebody, then he can refer you. Okay, read this book. If you have trust in that person, then you can read the book. But very much depends on how much you want to get after the goal. So to make it more clear and to make it more simple. Sri Srila Prabhupada just he gives these four books as the reference and then go through it. Now, if you go through these books, you should have enough understanding of your position, and if further clarification needed, then you can see also in these books, you see Srila Prabhupada quoting that he took the references from other books. And if something is not clear, how does it fit here? You may refer to the book and see the context, everything, how it is done. Now, Srila Prabhupada clearly gives it. But if for us, because of our consciousness, is not clear, we may just refer to that and see where is the context. But then we should not get sighted. Oh, this is very interesting. And it's actually more interesting than this. And then we completely lose we get sidetracked. Then it's too many.
Yeah, great. We can see now studying the Bhagavad Gita. Only the Gita has so many angles, so many possibilities to get through the Gita and take 3 years. So already it's a lot.
Yes.
Just to focus there. So what I understood from this point is that there are two other meanings behind. One, as you mentioned, is to prevent me from getting sidetracked. So with this, I'll be sure to be focused on the aim of the Vedas, the supremacy of Krishna, and my goal to be a servant of Krishna. And the second is that I don't get sidetracked with things that I know a lot, so I'm very scholar that can speak about many, and get extra prestige about it to go that way. So it prevents. Prabhupada mentions that sannyasi shouldn't read too many books to become very great lecturer.
The sannyasi can and should be very great lecturer, but he should be not giving discourses based on vigyan. So the shastra can be taken as a support, because vigyan he gives based on guru sadhu shastra. So it is there. But he must, when he reads a book, then he sees the application of it based on what you are studying. Like we are studying Nectar of Devotion. Now, I went through the Madhura Kadambini. And then some points from the book very nicely fit into the book. Like we already discussed here a few points. How Srila Bhishma Chakravarti Thakur describes aparat, and specifically Vaishnava aparat. This is very beautiful explanation. Very clear. So it clarifies the point how the namaparat and specifically the Vaishnava aparat are so important to avoid. So that's his angle point of view. So now, for the student, it makes it more clear because it sees from so many and it all points to one point. So the mind also can be pointed to one single point, and that's Krishna because he is the object. So we don't have to think of what actually are we supposed to do. Because on the platform of Nishtha, we know what to do. We know this is the process by which we go back to Godhead. The way how we go about it may have to be refined. So ruchi, not to get a taste, asakti, so then we get steady. And then the symptoms of bhava and prema come. That's due to the refinement. We have to get clear in our mind that that's what we want. Unless that's there, and before we get purified of most of the anarthas, on the anartha nivritti stage, then yes, it is more difficult. Because everything we consult based on our desires. yeah, I would like to go for Harinam, but no, I want to sleep, and no, I don't feel like. I want to go for Mangalarati, but I prefer sleeping. No. I want to do this, but no, I prefer to do something else. It's due to the anarthas. So prefer doesn't mean that I really want to do it, but no, it sounds nice. But once we get clear in our mind that yes, no, Harinam, this is the best. Sarana, no, as given, this is the best. So I'll do it no matter what. Sanatan Goswami was sick, and he would, in his sarana, he would go, daily around, Govardhan, no matter what. So, that gives us the understanding. So, if we are fixed, and then we may not know, some point in how we get, what is the best way to get from this point to that point. But we know we want to get to that point. Then if we consult a Shastra, then we may get the ideal way. But, you see, the Shastra, it's one of the ways, but if we are really desperate, if we really want it, Krishna himself can reveal from within the heart as a Chataguru, and he can instruct. And in fact, when we read books, that's what Krishna does. Based on our desire, based on how much space we make in our heart for Krishna, then we see things in the book. Some devotees may not see that Srila Prabhupada wrote the most intimate things not in his books. They may just see some English words put together and it's a simple language. But Prabhupada, as genius as he is, that he put it that it is a simple language. But anybody at any time can take advantage of that. You see in his books what you are looking for. Not only Raja can do that. So, what's your approach? If you approach it a certain way, you will get a certain response, because it's a relationship. The book, it's also Krishna. It's a Bhagavad. So, you approach in certain mood, Krishna through the book reciprocates. And if you find what you are looking for in these four books, you are satisfied, why would you go somewhere else anyway? And then if you are not clear in some, you read the book, as soon as you are not clear in that point which you were addressing the other book, why would you need to read the rest of the book anyway? If you are satisfied, you wouldn't go farther to get further satisfaction somewhere else. That would be foolish. So if these four books are not enough, means we are not looking into depth. We are not looking more like white, just it's not for the vegan, it's just for the gyan. Yeah? Anything else? Yes.
When we study Bhagavad Gita, then we may also look at different angles of view from the different acharyas and the commentaries on the Gita.
Well, yeah, there are different commentaries. There are the view, the point is the same. The angles of approach, no, may be different, just how various acharyas describe. But if you don't have the understanding, if you don't have the point of view, which comes from guru and sadhu, then you may even consider, no, these books are contradictory. And that's very dangerous, because if that gives, no, puts doubt in your mind about that, or this book is not good, or who wrote it, oh, this, no, what kind of acharya would write this? And then you start to have doubts. No. Some of the Vaishnavas, they have doubts that our Sampradaya is actually bona fide. And why? Because of this point. They don't have clear understanding what actually is the role of acharya. So then they may not understand just how to apply certain things. They expect something and it's not the way they expect it. But that means that they are not really open-minded, they are more narrow-minded. And because of that, then no, it will not fulfill their desires, so then they will not be satisfied, so they are looking for some other satisfaction, somewhere else. And if somebody gives something more pleasant way, no, more flowery language, then it may fulfill satisfaction of some. So it's really depending on what you are looking for. But the acharyas don't talk about anything else. They talk about the same thing. They may take different approach. You see, like Baladeva Vidyabhushan, for him, devotional service starts when a devotee starts seeking for devotional service. Vishwan Chakravarti Thakur says devotional service starts by prema. Who is right? Right. How can they be both right?
A green mango is still a mango, but it's not a taste
yet. Yeah. You can take the analogy of sun, right? Well, there is no sun, but no. What is sun? What comes here, what you see, is the sun? Or what you see on the sky is the sun? Or the planet is sun? So, if we approach, if we actually look into the definitions as what it is, then we see that the Shastra, the guru and the sadhu, they don't talk about anything else. They talk about the same thing, but a different approach. And that's only so for our understanding. Now, if we take it as some contradiction, then it's due to our anarthas. If we find a contradiction now in two statements, okay, so then we may just be proud of how intelligent we are, so then we found two different things. But why are we not just a little bit more intelligent to think about why nobody else found it? Or maybe I should research more to see actually if I'm right. But many times it's just we get so stuck to our idea that no, our idea must be the best. So therefore, we just take it for granted. It's exactly what the scientists are doing. They take one theory, which is not even fully approved, and they apply it on anything they see. Microcosmos, the macrocosmos, not anywhere, anything. Just indiscriminately. Based on what? Just speculation. And then somebody else comes with some other idea and then just apply it over it. And that way then everything becomes more chaotic. But we take it, well, okay, here this seems to be a contradiction. But both are great acharyas not describing it. So rather than just seeing, oh, see, I found a fault. So think about why am I seeing it as a contradiction? Is there somebody who can explain it to me? If we take the humble position that, yes, I am the foolish person, I don't know how to apply it, then Krishna will reveal it. He will find a way how we will understand it, if we want. There was one devotee who was very eager to understand the structure of the universe. And he really wanted it to know. So once I heard he came to his room and then he just saw it. He just saw the structure of the universe in his room. Krishna arranged it. It's not impossible. But if we keep thinking about we are the smart guys, then what is the need of telling us anything? As long as Draupadi was holding on her sari, Krishna had no chance to help her. She didn't need help. So it's us who are the fools thinking that we are so smart. So Prabhupada gives clear description, and then if we understand what's behind it, then we will benefit. There was one devotee, I mean, probably many. One devotee, you know, was little interested in Ayurveda. So then, he would go and little study the Ayurveda so then he can help devotees. Well, while studying, then he got into really studying, he got into university and became a real doctor, not a devotee. No. He got sidetracked. So we have to be, careful. We have to be careful how to apply and also be aware of our own anarthas. Another devotee, he wanted to get married. And then, before even consulting anybody, he already chose whom he wants to get married. So then he went to the astrologian, asking, okay, can you see if this chart is good? And then, he said, no way. Don't get involved. Okay. And he went to another one. And then, will that work? No, are you crazy? No, just don't even think about it. It will not work. Alright. So he went another one. So then, third one says, no, please don't try. It will be disaster. Okay. He went to another one. He said, that may work. Sort of, it could. Okay, great. So he got blessings from the astrologer, right? So he got married. And in a few months, he divorced. It was a disaster. So he blames the astrologer. You told me I should get married. It didn't work. We get so attached to our own idea. We are so blinded to anybody is telling us something or anybody is trying to help us. We are so blind towards it because of the attachment. With knowledge it's the same. We come to find something. Oh, look, there is a difference. I found it. We get so attached to I found it. But we don't think about anything else. That's our fault. So if we sincerely look for the conclusion of the Shastras, then we will find the right way and the right conclusions. Otherwise not. So if we are prone to get sidetracked, better don't read any other books. If you can use that, the information of other books to support this information, then you can use it, but only for that. And I'm talking about Shastra. You don't have to read some like New Age books or anything like that which are far away from Shastra. Because there is no really need for. Why do we need to get involved in that? The knowledge which the Shastra is giving us, it's sufficient for any situation, for anybody, no, in the whole world. With that we can solve any problem. But do we believe that? Do we have trust in that? I would say that most devotees don't. That's why they have to look for something else, somebody else. No, some other way. Because we have no faith in our own literature. And when and if the economic collapses, which it's very highly possible, then people would be looking for new ways. What actually is the right thing to do? And then who is going to say? The economist who made that collapse possible? No. Only through Dharma can uplift the world. And they know it. That they are trying to squeeze in every possible cent out of it. So they will go to the end, no, as much as possible. Making the ordinary people suffer, but that doesn't matter to them. As long as they have profit from it. But when the people understand that they have been squeezed, so then they will look for answers to their questions. And then yes, then some other bogus gurus will come and then say this and say that, and then they will think, oh, it's so great. It's a masses of people. No, those are very easy to control. But if our devotees would be ready at the time, and they would be backed by the Shastra, they can explain the Shastra. They can show the consequences of the Shastra. Of the situation and everything, then people would naturally understand, yes, this is the way, we should follow Dharma. But only a person who is convinced that this is the path, who has the understanding, who has the realization, who applies Dharma in his own life, can talk about Dharma. If a doctor who is drinking and smoking, he is trying to convince you, don't drink and don't smoke, you will not take him seriously. It is very difficult. So people who don't follow Dharma and then just find excuses how to exploit the nature and other people, then how can you take them seriously that they want to protect? So you have to find a person who has those qualities. So naturally only devotees would be able to fulfill that. But then they must be, first of all, convinced themselves. So not just philosophy. To apply their philosophy in their life. Practically. Live it. Then you gain the realization. Not otherwise. Then it has a sense. Then people will trust. Because, okay, you read something, you applied it, it worked for you. I'll also do it and it will work for me. It made you happy. It should make me happy. If it doesn't, what did I do wrong? How do I apply it in my situation? And devotees must be ready to answer these questions. But if they don't apply themselves, how will they know the answer? Some quotation from, no, from Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam, something just remembered, but if they don't know how to explain, they don't know the principle, how to connect it, then they will not be really trusted. So that's a problem.
Trusting that this knowledge is the goal, everything solved, everything seems to be the point behind it, but to develop my trust that this is really going to, this is the knowledge that is going to take me to the spiritual world. This is the application of the demonstration world. In practice, it seems to be a relevant point, which sometimes the devotees, I admit that I have accepted, but in its application, I have used my other culture, my Buddhist culture, my other knowledge, and other things. But if you go to that extent, which you're pointing out, believe that we could do everything, anything based on these principles and apply them, that would be really valuable.
How did Prabhupada say that he will conquer the world?
Not changing it.
It's by cultural revolution. He used the word culture. And he didn't mean yogurt, right? Anyway, it's
not going to the theater.
It's the culture. So then, the Vaishnava culture. Culture, it's the whole life. How do you deal with situation? How, what is your approach? What's your value? How do you solve problems? Then, based on that, then people either trust or not. If somebody who is very, you know, good speaker, he can make people believe that actually he is their well-wisher. So then he promises no, so many things, he get no, out of the people no, money or whatever he wanted to get. And then once he's finished with them, then just run away. And then people understand they will be cheated. but they cannot do anything. So then somebody else comes and then says, yes, he was a cheater, no, we are, no, getting him. But in the meanwhile, no, then trust me, no, and I will, no, give you this, this, this and that. So it's because the people are looking for happiness. Every jiva is looking for happiness. So we, even though we go through very difficult situations, then we still see that's actually the beauty of Maya. Then the difficult situation we forget very quickly. Because if we wouldn't, it will be extremely difficult to live here. We always go through difficult situations, always distress. So if that would be, then there is no comparison to how much happiness we have compared to how much distress we go through. So we would naturally be always, no, down. It will be just, there will not be happiness. So okay, so we forget, so we tend to trust. Being naive, not even like just trusting, being naive. Because of the propensity of the conditioned soul being cheated. And we don't mind really being cheated. And there are others who don't mind to cheat. So naturally, no, goes together very well. Somebody extracts some money from you, you know, for some, I don't know how they call it, that, the game, no, like they send one letter and you send, no, few letters back with some money or something like that. Then you figure out, no, I mean, he cheated everybody. But anyway, it was only, say, 100 rupees, no, what will I do with it? Anyway. But you were cheated. And the person who cheated, He got, say, no, hundreds of thousands of people not to send 100 rupees, so he is the one who benefited. So now he thinks he is the winner. And the others, unlikely they will lose something, it's just little money. So, no, anyway, I got cheated. But, so the people, they lost out of their naivety. And the person, he thinks, he is the winner, right? But, in fact, he is the loser. Because of how you get the people, you cheat them. So by the cheating, you also get the karma for the way how you do it. If you gain anything illegally, there is a time that you can, for some time, you can enjoy it. But according to Shastra, it is, no, generally 14 years. That's the maximum like you can enjoy it. And then there will be some purification after that. So that's not worth it. You can't have everything perfect here. There will always be something for it. You cannot, you know, cheat somebody thinking that you are going to be free of any reaction for it. That's foolish. Smart is knowing that, then I should not cheat others. That means I may get less, I may not cheat the people of the money, so I may just live with whatever I really make. But then your life will be more stable. So that's smarter. So we have to make our own decision what actually we want to gain, we want to achieve. So not try to be too clever, not try to find so many ways how we can outsmart others. Because by that we will only outsmart ourselves. The next step, no, is that we will think that we are smarter than Krishna. We don't need Krishna. But then, if some big rains come, right, then who is going to leave the Govardhan? You cannot do it. I cannot do it. So who will protect you? It's Krishna only. So we have no other shelter. There's no other way. Okay, do devotees offer respect to the demigods? One should not neglect to offer due respect to the demigods. One may not be a devotee of demigods, but that does not mean that he should be disrespectful to them. According to the Vaishnava philosophy, one should offer respect even to an ant. So then, what is there to speak of such exalted persons as Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma? Similar point, like we were discussing. If we understand the position of a jiva, then we shouldn't have any problem respecting anybody. But based on their covering, based on that, we may discriminate between how we deal with such a jiva. No. If there is a jiva in the body of a wild elephant or a tiger, we don't go and then try to embrace, right? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu may. Because he sees, he is the Lord. And maybe some other pure devotees, they also may. But unless we see them on the equal platform, then it will be difficult. So therefore, we use our intelligence to discriminate. Well, tiger, just stay away. But the respect should be given to anybody. And what to speak of respecting the Dhamvasis, any living entities not being in the Dham. Why Vaishnavas do not cause harm to any living entity? This is a statement of Mahabharata. A person who does not disturb or cause painful action in the mind of any living entity, who treats everyone just like a loving father, who does his children, whose heart is so pure, certainly very soon becomes favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There was one story from the Shastra about Manduka Muni. Well, there are so many, in one story there are so many stories said, but just in nutshell, it was once he was sitting in his hermitage and he was meditating on the Lord. Now, so he was fully absorbed. Then there were some thieves and they stole some article and they were running because the soldiers, the king's soldiers, they were chasing the thieves. Now they were running by, they saw the cottage, so they dumped their loot in the cottage. So then, and then they ran away. Now the soldiers come, they see the cottage, they look inside, they found the stuff. They see there is some guy sitting there and pretending that he is not seeing them. This is a thief. But he was in deep meditation. Anyway, he is a thief. So they took him and they actually poke him onto the pole and then they next to the road. He was still in meditation. Now then there was another story about how a wife goes with her husband who is a leper. Now while walking there, so leprosy is a very bad disease and the body really stinks. So that stink wake up the sage. Now he sees that he is on the pole, poked on the pole, and then what's this? Why am I here? So he first he curses the leper, saying that by sunrise you die. Because you caused me to break my meditation. The wife says, there will be no sunrise. She was a chaste woman. So it came true. Yes. He asked, then why actually he is here? So he asked Yamaraj. No, what is this nonsense? Why? I'm doing meditation. And then, how am I to end up on the pole? Well, the soldiers, they mixed you up for a thief, so then they punished you, by death, on the pole. They didn't know you were meditating. How did it can happen? So Yamaraj explained. In previous life, when you were a small boy, you were ripping, ants' legs. And then poking them with stick. This lifetime, that's the reaction for that. So you end up this. So then he curses Yamaraj and he will get born on the earth. So he was Maharaj Yudhishthira. But, then the leper didn't die. Because the wife, chaste woman, what she says is true. So Surya could not go on the chariot. He could not actually, the sun could not raise. So Brahma himself comes and then please not do it. Let the sun come up. He said, well, if I do that, then my husband will die. So Brahma promised, okay, yes, that's true, but as he dies, then I will now sprinkle him. He has the special water, and then he will become youthful, nice young man. So then it happened. The sun came up, then he died. He sprinkled him, and he became free of his disease and very handsome man. So anyway, these are many stories in one, but the point is that who is free of those reactions, right? So we have to be very careful what we are doing and how we are going to interpret everything there. So we have to apply our knowledge, our vigyan. We have to know that there is no happiness in this material world. The happiness, what we consider happiness, is just not really being distressed. But the true happiness only comes when we find our relationship to the Lord. So that's our responsibility. And if it's not happening, then we are not the ones to blame. I mean, we cannot blame others. So we will not be free of the reactions. It's in Krishna's hands. Either through Mahamaya or through Yogamaya, then now we will get our reactions. But if we properly engage us in devotional service, so all these reactions will not be any botherment for us. Because it's Krishna himself who says in Bhagavatam that the devotee, the suffering of a devotee, I make him poor. That's my special mercy. That's Krishna says. But how do we interpret it? How do we understand it? We need guru and sadhu to understand. Otherwise, how will you understand this point? And it's Bhagavatam. And Krishna himself saying it. It's my special mercy that I make that devotee suffer. What kind of God is he? He must be very cruel. What is this? So we have to refine our understanding to understand it. Okay, then questions then for the essays for the chapter 7 can be done. Since just mentioned so far, we have you can look here. I'm missing still some essays. So please, after the class, then if you look, maybe I missed something to write. Maybe you can clarify it.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare